Hello. Thank you so much for staying up pretty late with us. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, and we talk about a lot of different things on this show. And as a mother and a working woman, and I'm actually head of household, I kind of struggle a little bit with trying to figure out my place in the world. And we have on the line with us a woman who's writing about this, taking on the challenges of work, family, and purpose. We have on the line with us Dilshad Dayani, and she's the author of Confrontation 9 and founder of the World Women Council. Hi, Dilshad. How are you doing?
Fine. Thank you, Patty. Thank you so much for having me tonight.
Oh, our pleasure. And well, let me ask you first, what is the meaning of Confrontation 9? If we were looking at this book, and we'd be like, what's the 9 for?
Absolutely. The 9 stands for the challenges that we face. There are 9, and 5 of them are about the real-life contemporary issues women face, and the 4 are the soft skill tools that one needs to embrace to find meaningful success. So let's say 4 are the facts that you need to confront, and 5 are the tools that you need to embrace in order to achieve the success that you're looking for.
Sounds like a math problem, and you've broken this down so that it, have you done it this way in order to make it more consumable, kind of, so that, because otherwise...
Yes.
Yeah.
I thought it was so difficult to just come up with 9 tools. I thought, let me give a scenario. Let me give a premise first why we should be embracing the last 5 tools in order. And then I wanted to validate the experiences you and I are having on a daily basis. And we are always kind of foggy in our perceptions. So I wanted to validate you and the readers and everyone together. And before I can direct them to the tools, that this is the way we can solve the issue. So first the problems, then the issue, like the solutions.
Well, that makes sense. When you break it down, again, it's easier for people to kind of wrap their minds around how to approach those solutions. Was there a catalyst that what was the particular catalyst that made you sit down and go, okay, this is why we all need to kind of focus on these elements?
I think my journey itself played the role of a catalyst.
Mm-hmm.
I've been thinking about this for a very long time, and every day it has been a cognitive debate within, within the women that I come in contact with. And I think everybody, all of us, confront these kind of conflicting issues, and we all come up with different answers. And some of them are not as black and white as we would wish they were. So basically, coming from a different culture was initially a major challenge for me. Then I had children here, and I talk about that in the book, that how I wanted to be a very successful American woman, and at the same time, I didn't want to give up the cultural ideals that I brought from my home country into the host country. So basically, I think as immigrants, we go through that on a daily basis. And when I worked for 19 years with women coming from different countries as multicultural women groups, I realized that I was not the only one. They do that on an everyday basis as well. And I thought one day when I would get time, I would definitely pen down. But the real inspiration for the book came, Patty, when I decided to launch a youth initiative for women leadership program.
Mm-hmm.
Mentor and create a powerful voice of our youth, especially young women, kind of as legacies. So 2 years ago, after founding the World Women Global Council, I tried to pen down these experiences, and was sitting with a mentor, and we were just having a casual discussion, just like tonight, and they kind of motivated me that I should start writing books now, because with all the experiences, it could be a kind of a permanent format. And we would be able to share best practices and a stronger message and the cultural elements that I always talk about. So this is the inspiration that came on how I can configure and build the courage to ask questions about tradition, norms, cultural values, and media conditioning in order to build our own unique culture map. And that is something that I've always been looking for, that how do we build our own culture map?
Right.
Because we are in the middle of technology and globalization of values at this time.
Well, my mother has a similar situation where she came here from Mexico in the early 70s. For her, and I don't know if this is similar for you or people that you've encountered, her intention was not to stay, was to get the experience, learn English, develop skills to take back to Mexico. And once she was here, she found opportunities that she didn't necessarily have access to in Mexico. Have you come across that for women who come to the United States?
Yes. And you know what? Just like your mother, you know, I've spoken to so many. It's like a yo-yo. Till you come to a point where you freeze, where you say, okay, now this is my home and I've decided, no, I'm not. But, you know, after many years, you feel like, no, I'm going back home. I don't want to live here.
Right.
I've decided. So, yes, everybody goes through the experiences like that. But at one point in time, like myself, and, you know, you kind of define the point, the reference point, the paradigm shift. Yes, this is going to be my home. And I have decided to live here, and I want to incorporate this as a value system, and I would not want to do this. So you handpick the value systems, you know, in the new country.
Well, and I think that, you know, because of, you know, a lot of talk right now about immigration, you know, there's a lot of resistance, but there are so many success stories, and not just success stories, where there are people like you and my mom who come here and, like you said, they pick and choose, but it seems that you have embraced American culture and want to find out how you fit with each other, whether it's your culture or American culture.
Yes, and I think I did not want it to leave everything, and that's what when I were in my 19 years of work with Women, Patty, I've told everyone that I haven't given anybody a prescription of success
right.
in this book. I have not attempted to do anything like that. I have given them food for thought, and I have given them tools. Now you can use to your advantage, and you find your own way, because there is not a right way, I can say, to raise a child or to leave a legacy. We all have our family dynamics. We all have our value system, and we all have our unique inventory of experiences. On that basis, you create a premise, and from that premise, you find the tools on how to navigate and build that map for yourself. And of course, you and I could have very different value systems in our homes, and there is nothing wrong with that. I may embrace 5 of the American values, and you may embrace 3 of them, but that does not make you any less worthy from one person to the other. But I think that enriches the American fabric under which we all live together, and we have come up with our own value systems, and that is how we are in turn nurturing the American landscape as well, the cultural landscape.
And people do worry that, you know, that immigrants aren't going to conform. You write about conformity, and I think that that's it's a trigger word, you know, from both sides, whether it's the people who come here and they're like, well, what does conformity mean to me? And you also talk about how conformity can feed the comfort zone. What does that talk to us about that?
Okay, so I think conformity is such a strong word that it embraces our whole life without we realizing that how much we are stretching it. Media contributes to this emphasis by kind of, you know, instilling on a daily basis the value of fitting in and feeding our perceptions. And in order to realize our worth, we must be very courageous on first how to define that word. And even before that, we must understand why are we conforming to a content and to whom are we conforming. Conforming itself is not bad in its nature, because that helps all of us to live, very harmoniously in society. But when we stretch too much and feed our value systems on the basis of what others are doing around us,
mm-hmm.
or what is popular rather than what is significant in our lives. And when we feed the popularity, then we are very miserable after a few years, because we feel that this is not who we are. After some time, we feel that, yes, it does feed our comfort zone. And why does it feed our comfort zone? Because it helps us get approval from people around us. It helps us to fit in, because we don't have the courage to kind of stand up like a sore thumb, or we feel that if we separate from the group, there will be isolation. And there's another factor to it that we feel that if we are different, then how do we address that? We don't have the tools to address it. So basically, I talk about in the book that these are the things. Are you worried about these things? Because there will be, you will have to work with your social circle. You will have to find a way to kind of create a new set of practices to work with your inner passion and the inner satisfaction. Because I think for some time you can feed your comfort zone, yes. But the real life starts beyond the comfort zone. And once you realize that, then you are able to define and declare and then execute your inner worth. And that's how you get the abundance and fulfillment in life.
And that's daunting. It's daunting for people to be authentic sometimes. And but it is important. And I think when you identify those fears that you're talking about, it makes them easier to sort of address. We are talking to Dilshad Dayani, and do you think you could stay with us, because there's so much more I want to talk to you. I know it's pretty late, but if we could talk to you after the news, I'd really appreciate it.
Sure.
Oh, thank you so much. We're talking to Dilshad Dayani, author of the book Confrontation 9 and founder of World Women Council. We're going to talk to her a little bit more after the news. Thank you so much for staying up with us. It's pretty late, and we're hanging out until 2 a.m. when Nita Giglio comes in, and I look forward to talking to him because he had a really great show last night and talked to a lot of friends and coworkers of Roy Leonard and had great stories to share, and it was a pleasure to listen to Nick, and hard, too, because it's heartbreaking when someone that you really admire has experienced such a significant loss. Right now, we are talking to Dilshad Dayani, who is the author of the book Confrontation 9, and she's the founder of the World Women Council. We're talking about the challenges of work, family, and purpose. Thank you so much for staying with us, Dilshad. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
And now, one of the things, again, in this introduction I just mentioned, the challenges of work, family, and purpose, you know, everyone talks about these measures of success and achievement and high scores and performance. There's so many things that people are chasing. How does your book define success differently for people coming from different cultures, as well as, you know, people in general trying to find this mm-hmm. meaning in their life?
I think this is one of the questions that has also baffled me for a long time, because we are a very high-driven society and we want to achieve everything, right? So what happens is that when you see people coming from different cultures, and even people living here in general, we all have a value systems upon which we base high priority items and how we want to achieve those things. So basically in the book, I talk about that the first thing is, as we discussed earlier in your question to me, was about conformity, that we have to achieve the clarity. Without that, we cannot define our meaningful success. We will be chasing, we will be running around with the kind of borrowed or ideas from others. They are not going to be our own. And I feel that the truth is that we all doubt ourselves on a regular basis, and much of that doubt is formed and forced upon us, I think, are from outside influences. So then society shapes our ideas of what is right and what is wrong and what is acceptable and what is frowned upon. We kind of sway into that direction. It governs our lives in many ways, to the point where it kind of hinders our ability to achieve success and happiness. And we are held back by the rules of what society, culture, and what people are and the media is talking around us. The question to ask ourselves in order to achieve that I mentioned in my book mm-hmm. is that we need to learn the power of questioning our cultures, our norms, our traditions. Yes. It has not been said before because you feel that you are kind of challenging respect authority and sometimes religious roots. But I think this is the time that we need to analyze that whatever we are trying to run for, is it really worth it? Is it really ours? Is it something that I would like to, you know, kind of embrace it? Not after 50, 55 years, we think, oh, we were running on a script designed by other people or from ideas that were never our own. So basically, we have to learn the power of questioning, one, in order to achieve the clarity and to define a meaningful success. And why is success defined and popular, kind of popular by limited people and definition? So we need to define our own version of success. And when we ponder these questions, we arrive at a moment of powerful self-discovery. And we see that awareness, and we see that we have allowed it to happen for ourselves. And then at that point, we discover our strength from within. Because when we follow other people, that's when we are very overwhelmed, stressed out, and we are also pressured. And we feel that we are just running. Let me give you an example. Recently, mm-hmm. I met an attorney. And she was asking me, so what are you doing these days? I don't see you much. And that was like about six months ago. I was busy writing the book and doing other things. And I said, I'm working on a book. And she asked me what was the topic. However, I discussed it very briefly. And she said, you know what? You know, I've been thinking this for like about 4 years. And both husband, wife are attorney. She said, I go to work every day. And I think, why am I doing this? Why do I not spend more time doing the things that I love? Just because I'm an attorney and I have to carry this job. And, you know, I've been thinking about it and I'm reflecting and I went to a retreat and I think I will come up with an answer very soon. And perhaps this is not what I want to do in the next 10 years. So basically, there are many people who are now questioning. And my book is like, we don't have to wait for such a long time. We have to teach this questioning part to our children. So
absolutely,
they become more happier beings by questioning periodically, because success changes its definition in every phase of life. What it was more a success and dream 15 years ago, you would agree, it's not right now for us. For me, my highest priority when my children were born, they were there. That was for me as a successful mother. But how many times does society account or appreciates a mother with a special need or mother, a single mother? Nobody tells her that she's a great successful mother, whereas a corporate woman is always given a lot of awards. So our society has kind of labeled these roles and has kind of created boxes where we feel that this is more important than that role.
Right.
But unless we are more aware of it and we kind of have an inner dialogue with us, then only we can achieve the fulfillment and abundance.
It sounds like what you're talking about is sort of living outside, you know, for what the expectations are of society and not being present in what your reality is. And you mentioned single mothers and mothers of children with special needs. I think that there does seem to be a dialogue where that we, you know, we say, oh, especially with mothers who have a child with special need, we say, oh, I don't know how she does it, which kind of I can't explain it, but it's weird language to use with a mother who has a child with a disability, or women who are as though they're doing something outside of you know, the expectations, you know, somehow like we've lowered the bar for single moms and mothers with children with disabilities. And I agree. How is it daunting for women when they start to question what their path is? Have you come across women who like really believe that they needed to be this professional, successful, whether it was in law or the corporate world?
Yes, I think, Patty, you're so right. I think we all are going through a very, very challenging time right now where people are questioning whether it's really for us. We are kind of bombarded with technology, social media, massive content overload on our cognitive capacities, and multitasking has been leveraged to the point where it feels that human beings are ready to collapse. And people are given the perspective or the impression that if you don't multitask, there is certainly something wrong with you. In my book, I do mention that you do not live in the present and you fail to enjoy the present moment when you have your phone and when you have people sitting around you and you are checking messages and you are not enjoying their presence. And this is a fact, and people are kind of debating on these things, that how much are we going to submit to all these things that are coming up on a daily basis. So unless we question, and as far as your question goes about corporate women, yes, she is questioning whether it is the right thing for her to do, to stretch herself so much. Because if you go back, and I also talk about in the book the how to operate from the principle of efficiency rather than deficiency.
Ooh.
Because we women are taught that there is something less from the time you are born. I'm not talking specifically about the American culture, because my book has a backdrop of multicultural women, and I have discussed issues. But even in the American culture, if you see, you realize that there is something less that the woman has to make herself complete. In many cases, if you see that if she is not married, something is missing about her.
Mm-hmm.
She does not have, okay, so she gets married. So now there is a missing component. Oh, she does not have children. That's why, you know. So she has children. After that, oh, she hasn't started working. So there is no end to it. And then again, when she does everything, even when she goes, delivers the baby and she's in the workforce, she's not paid equal, even to this day. So there are so many things. So unless the women, and I hear a lot of debate with my work in advocacy for 19 years, I have heard so much debate that now women needs to have, you know, representation in the workforce. Women need to have political representation. But aren't we supposed to be changing the mindset of the men instead of now dragging women and making those seats kind of filling so we can make our representation? Who is building at home and who is doing what? I don't understand. It should not be a battle of genders. It should be seen as family empowerment. When women sits at home, she's building human capital. She's raising the children, so we do not end up with tons of rehab programs. So basically, our society is fixing the problem from the wrong end.
I would like to go back and reiterate what you said, which is we should be educating the men. What kind of response are you getting from men? Is there a resistance to, like, you know?
I'm sure you know it.
Yes. How do we educate them without making them, yes, feel like we're attacking them? I think that's probably where that's gender battle.
I think you are so right. I think we have created, especially with the mushrooming of women's organization, it seems like another Tea Party. And I think it is more about, at this point, I think we are cohabitants on this planet. We cannot function on our own. Even when we realize that there has been a major gap and there have been things missing, but it is a historical perspective. However, I think a lot of men are coming on board. They're realizing it for the sake of their daughters,
See,
for the sake of the future generation.
That, I think that's key. If we can put it in perspective that way, whether it's their daughters or their wives, rather than sort of everyone entrenching and digging in harder, we should be open to dialogue and seeing, you know, the point of view of the other person.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of men, I've come across so many men who, when I used to do radio shows to empower women from different countries, and I've had phone calls that they embraced, and they used to just thank me for doing this show, that, you know, what you're doing is going to help my daughter, that we are not going to repeat the vicious cycle of domestic abuse, or we are not going to repeat the cycle of, you know, kind of a low treatment for our girls and our younger generation. But basically, I think a lot of men realize that, and they are doing this campaign in their houses by encouraging their daughters. But we need more men. Instead of, we are asking more women to come out of their homes, instead of that, we should make more men realize that when they are home, they need to be paid equal. They need to be respected more. Motherhood should gain that kind of momentum, what a corporate woman does. And unless we women ourselves think higher of another mother, it's not going to happen.
Now, that brings up an interesting point when you say we need to educate the men and have them treat women with respect and want them to get equal pay. What was your reaction when you saw this story about this senator who had just had a baby and there were senators telling her she looked better, she looked good even when she was fat, those kinds of situations? I know that this isn't, I don't know if this is part of the book necessarily,
yes.
But
mm-hmm.
That sort of environment is kind of hostile.
It is. And I think a lot of arguments that I hear from people, and especially even from women, I think there is something missing there. Either they are not on the same plane where they are on one hand advocating a certain agenda. On the other hand, there are statements that they make. So I feel that there is a conflict between the two, and they need to come in consensus with exactly what you want. Sometimes I feel that a lot of women are struggling to see what do you want, you know, whether you want to stay home or whether you want to work. Then you are confused by your own perceptions, and you are confused by the agenda that you want to put forth. Then how do you expect other people to understand you more?
Right.
So that is a conflict here. We as women need to get together, and we need to sit down. What exactly do we want? And yes, I was given a lot of that. There is a lot of push here that women need to start, be in the workforce, because without proper representation, we will never be able to find what we need, or if we don't voice our concerns. But at the same time, I feel that it is extremely important for a mother to be with her children.
Mm-hmm.
And I have never, ever discounted motherhood, even after. In fact, I was myself being kind of ridiculed when I stayed home, that I'm wasting my time.
isn't it weird when you say, people ask, well, what do you do? I stay home for the kids. Oh, like, and there's sort of like that you just stay home sort of seems to be the implication.
Yes,
as though you're not contributing. And I
think that even you say you're a homemaker, it's still the definite. From housewife to homemaker, it has not changed much, the frown.
Right. Or that sound, oh. Sort of the the unspoken unkindness is sort of right there, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Now, before we go, I did want to ask you a couple more questions, because you mentioned about fathers wanting to, you know, encourage their daughters. In general, though, you know, there is that idea about leaving a legacy for our children. Talk to us a little bit about that from your book.
This is my favorite chapter, Patty. It's about it's the ninth chapter, and I talk about living and leaving a legacy. That how do you live your legacy and how do you leave behind? We all want the best for our children, but I think as parents, we want happiness for our child. And I talk about in many places that materialistic pursuits are not an issue anymore when we have manufacturers that sell things for such cheap prices around the world, and we are a very big market on that. So we are not here for materialistic kind of goals. But what are we going to give our children so they can sustain, so they can be happy, can get sustainable happiness? So in my book, I mention about giving back. And when you give back the compassion principle and what you need to do on a daily basis, when your children see you giving back, then they realize that there is a different paradigm to draw happiness from. And it's not just buying things every weekend. It is more about what you want to give back. And when that is in place, I think the children begin to understand the value of things compared to value of happiness, of what is more important in their lives and how do they want to draw that, and what are the different ways they would do it. And when they start giving back and when they see you doing it,
mm-hmm.
questioning it and using it as the best parental practice, then the children start following that. You don't have to say much. You have to do it, and the children see you doing it, and they see you feeling for other people. And when they see you, they will do it, because parenting is like, you know, it lasts for generations. And I remember one, my grandmother used to say, whatever, you know, you learn, but your mother is going to come around frequently to raise your child. Yeah. And it did happen.
through your actions, right? Because what you learned then becomes what they learned. It is, that's not to say that if there's a cycle that maybe isn't what you want to pass on, that you can't learn from, you know, from inspirational people like yourself and other writers and other speakers. Because there is that element of, well, what your environment is. I know that my mother had a very difficult childhood, and we all have our story, don't we?
Yes, we do. But you must have experienced as a mother that many times, many things that you challenge your mother, but when the time came, you found the wisdom in it and you did it for your own children.
Absolutely. My mother is she kind of commands respect, and that's one of the things that I've learned from her is to not settle for less is actually one of the great things. We have a caller. Do you mind if I take a call while we're talking?
Yes, please.
Evelyn?
Yes.
How can we help you?
Well, I have a book that is called Gaudy Night by Dorothy Sayers, Sayers.
Mm-hmm.
It was copywritten in 1936.
What?
And it's, yes. And she is an extremely well-written woman,
mm-hmm.
and she deals with the topic of women's roles, men's roles, and how they interact, and how
they can function together to sort of create an environment that isn't negative toward either.
Exactly.
There you go.
Exactly.
And that's from 1936. Well, that's Dorothy Sayers.
Yes.
We'll take a look at that. Thank you, Evelyn. That's good to know.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. Because, bye. Deshaud, we often think that we've sort of created, this sort of dialogue, but it is something that continues. And I've taken so much of your time. I appreciate it. We didn't finish our conversation. Would you mind if we do this again sometime?
Sure, I would love to, Maddie. And I think the dialogue is still continuing since 1936 and will go on.
It certainly will. And we can find your website, drdilshaud.com, which is on my Facebook page right now as well. And where's your book available?
It's available on Amazon, Confrontation 9. And I also have a website that takes you straight to Amazon, confrontation9.com. So this website will take you to Amazon as well and to my website.
That's Confrontation 9, and you also have the website worldwomenglobalcouncil.org, and we will find you on Facebook as well. We've been talking to Dilshaud Dayani, and it's been a wonderful conversation, and I look forward to doing it again.
Thank you so much, Patty.
Thank you. Have a lovely evening.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you.